Welcome to Faithless Brewing, episode 45.5. What does that mean? This is going to be a special episode on coronavirus. We'll get into what that means in a bit. For now, this episode is me, Damon, your host, and I'm joined with a special guest, Maria, and we're both joining you from Seattle. Maria, how's it going?
Oh, I'm good. We had a foggy morning, but it's finally clearing up, and I'm getting to see a bit of sun.
Yeah, I know. Sun is a rarity in Seattle sometimes.
It really is.
Yeah, so we want to discuss coronavirus. There's been a lot of news coverage. Talking to my parents and my friends, I think that a lot of people are not always on the same wavelength of this. Being in Seattle, we've gotten a little bit of perspective on it, and we want to share that and what we've learned. Before we get too far, though, Maria, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I grew up in San Francisco, went to school in LA, and just now recently live in Seattle. I work in tech, and actually my company, along with many other Seattle-based companies, has asked my team to work from home. So right now, I'm trying to effectively self-quarantine, stay at home as much as possible, and refocus my hobbies on cooking and reading instead of skiing and rock climbing.
Oh, no skiing. That sucks. That's one of the best things out there.
Yes, it sucks.
About me, some of you may know me as a magic hobbyist of sorts. I also work in tech, and I'm working from home. My company is also following this Seattle work-from-home recommendation, and I have a math PhD. We're not professionals in epidemiology or public health, so if you're curious, we definitely recommend reading some sources that we'll be mentioning and do your own research. We want to discuss coronavirus, which is a major potential worldwide crisis almost. There's been a lot of news coverage, and it's been slowly spreading, but for example, like I talked to my parents. This might just be that they're my parents, not that they're from the Midwest, but they're like, oh, it's not in the Midwest, we're not concerned at all. And I was like, well, it wasn't in Seattle 2 weeks ago, and now it is. So I think this is like a very important thing. We want to help get the word out. It's just important to be up to speed on this. Our tentative outline is, first, we'll discuss what is the coronavirus. Second, high-level history. Third, preparedness recommendations. And four, just some speculation about what the world could become. Some people get kind of anxious when they hear about this. It's like an impending crisis. There's actually like a Reddit subreddit specifically for those people. I think it's COVID-19 support. And so if you're that type of person, maybe this episode isn't for you. So let's just get started. First off, what is coronavirus, Maria?
Yeah, the interesting thing about coronavirus is that it's only been around for a couple of months. So there's a lot more that we don't know about it than that we do know. What we do know is that it's an illness. The symptoms are fever, cough, generally flu-like symptoms, but it's pretty unusual for it to make you have a runny nose. So runny nose, probably not a symptom. Fever, cough, trouble breathing, definitely symptoms. We'll get into the mortality or case fatality rates later, but overall, it seems pretty dangerous for older people, think like 60 years old and older, but not dangerous at all for younger folks, especially children. We're not completely sure how it gets transmitted, but it seems to be through close contact with individuals. So if you're within 6 feet of someone who's infected for an extended period of time, it's likely that you'll be infected as well, and especially through droplets, so what's produced when you cough or sneeze.
Yeah, Maria makes it sound a little dire on transmission. My understanding is if a family member is sick, there's like a 10% transmission rate, give or take, 10 to 15%.
What I read is that it's much more contagious than the flu.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had roommates with the flu before and I didn't get sick. It's hard though. I mean, you'll find if you follow this articles every single day and they all say different things. The data's all over the place. Tons of scientists are spinning up their work on this project. And as a result, you get tons of different results coming out all the time. And they're not always consistent with each other.
Yeah, there's tons of speculation right now in the scientific community around the R-naught number for this virus. You'll hear R-naught a lot, and it's just a measure of how transmissible it is. So an R-naught of 3 would mean that if you're infected, you will, on average, infect 3 people. An R-naught number of less than 1 means the virus will die off pretty quickly. The higher it is, the more people are likely to get it. So I've heard estimates of R-naught ranging from 2, maybe even over 5 for this one in particular.
Right. And just to toss out a kind of high level, you know, how big is this? There's epidemiology experts that I've heard saying that in the next year or so horizon, or maybe a couple of years, that they expect 20 to 60% of the world population to get ill. I think they've been revising it steadily downwards from the higher end of that range to the lower end. But again, everything I would take with a big grain of salt.
Yeah. And it's also going to depend a lot on what control measures we take. We'll talk about this later, but if you go full China and quarantine entire cities, it'll probably infect much less people than fine if you just let it run its course.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what the virus is at a high level. And we'll basically be discussing it the whole episode, so you'll learn more. But what is the history of this so far?
We really only started hearing about the coronavirus in January. People think it might have started sometime around December or maybe a month or two before that in Wuhan, China. But China only reported the first death from this on January 11th. So it's only been less than 2 months at this point. Then 10 days after we got the first case in China, that's when we got the first case in the United States. About 10 days after that, January 23rd, China locked down Wuhan, meaning they really said that people can't leave their homes. There's speculation and videos floating around that there were times where people were even forcibly quarantined, like their doors were welded shut, but you saw webcams just panning over the streets in China and there was no one out there. And there were drones flying around telling people to go home if they were outside. January 30th, a week after that, the World Health Organization, WHO, they declared a global health emergency. Today, we have about 100,000 infections, about 200 cases across the US, which is about where Wuhan was 7 weeks ago.
Yeah, 200 diagnosed cases in the US. There's a long story that we'll get into about the US's testing capabilities, but it's actually pretty hard to estimate how far along we are.
Yeah, there's always a big question mark around the numbers, because when this was rolling out in China, everyone was speculating that China was underreporting their numbers, either intentionally or just because they weren't able to measure accurately. Now we're in the exact same situation in the US.
Yeah. And there's this word, the P word, pandemic. And somehow people have been like, is this a pandemic? No, not yet. It's only in China. Pandemics in multiple continents or every continent or something. And now it's like, okay, well, this seems like a pandemic. And like, I read some posts and people are like, no, it's not a pandemic. It's not in Antarctica. Okay, I'm not sure about like the technical definition of pandemic, but it really seems like it's getting to that point now.
It seems like a very controversial point too. At least on Reddit, whenever you see an article about World Health Organization, press conference, or briefing, all the top comments are about making fun of them for not calling it a pandemic yet, even though it obviously is.
Yeah, there's a weird political angle to this whole thing. It's happening in the US during our build up to an election season, and just kind of across the globe, I think a lot of country leaders, international leaders want to seem confident, but this is also like a kind of crisis that the modern world has not seen since maybe 1912 with the Spanish flu. And we live in a very different world from then to begin with. But yeah, it's already spread. I think the hotspots in the world right now are Italy, Iran, and South Korea. They've had, I think, the most diagnosed cases after China. It's unknown. Like, I then read an article that says, like, actually, Italy got it from Germany. But a lot of these countries, you look at the numbers, and for example, we're talking the number of people that get tested is in the hundreds or thousands. And so if we're talking about a disease that could have spread to hundreds of thousands, that just isn't a whole lot of testing that's done.
Iran is particularly crazy from my point of view, because a bunch of high-up government people are getting infected. And a lot of the countries that have recently gotten cases in the past week or two, they got those cases exported from Iran. So Iran is already reporting fairly large numbers of people who have the disease, but speculation is that they have way, way more. Otherwise, they wouldn't be exporting so many cases worldwide.
Right. In terms of the history, Maria mentioned that China imposed this lockdown in Wuhan. It's really worth kind of reiterating. The Chinese government, back then in January, these articles were saying, people were saying draconian measures. And draconian implies, you know, not good. Like, the government is being overbearing here. And that may be true, but it's starting to look more and more like what China did is perhaps necessary, even if it is dramatic and very, you know, incredibly intrusive to people's lives.
Well, the crazy thing is that it seems to have worked. The lockdown has been around for less than 2 months, and we're seeing Chinese case numbers dropping dramatically. There's tons of press about their hospitals, which used to be overflowing. They actually built a few makeshift hospitals in a matter of 10 days. But now these hospitals are sitting at half capacity. Some are almost empty. I think I read something about a hospital closing. So they told people to stay home for 2 months. It's a lot, but really not the end of the world. And now they seem to be recovering quite nicely.
Yeah. And so we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of open questions here. Like, for example, well, maybe they slowed it down, but it'll basically flare back up again unless they continue with this strong lockdown. And then the other question is, what about the rest of the world, which so far has not implemented such strong policies?
Yeah, the question is, should they? And what happens to us if the whole world is staying home? Can we produce enough food and medicine and medical supplies?
Right, right. There's also been, this is actually pretty crazy, there's been a couple outbreaks on cruise ships, Diamond Princess being the first one. They were cruising around Asia. I think they stopped in Japan and Hong Kong, among other places, and they had an outbreak on it. Basically, I think getting quarantined on a cruise ship is just not a good time, first off. But second off, it was actually one of our weirdly best sources of data because it's a contained ecosystem once the cruise ship is more or less floating off of the shore. And I think they tested every single person on it, which gives us some of our best estimates for infection rate and symptom rate. Although cruise ships tend to have a slightly biased population than the general population.
Yeah, a lot of older people on cruise ships for sure. So the fatality rates might be higher if it affects older people more. I'm not sure it's the best measure of how transmissible it is, just because cruise ships are in general like a cesspool of bacteria. In fact, there's been a bunch of known cases of norovirus outbreaks on cruise ships. Like, people are just in such close quarters and all touching things. So they all tend to get each other sick much more frequently than they would in a normal environment.
Yeah, let's just say on the flip side, I was watching Twitch and I saw an ad for a cruise line offering 299 cruises through the Caribbean. So prices are great right now.
Yeah, if you want to go on a cruise, right now is the time to do it. I mean, if you think about it, it might be a good idea to get sick early before everyone else does and the hospitals are overwhelmed.
Yeah, I mean, if you knew you were going to get sick, that's a great question. I'm not prepared to give a recommendation on that one.
I mean, I'm not licking elevator buttons yet, but it's something that I've thought about a lot recently because the thing that seems the most dangerous about this particular virus is not the fatality rate. In my age group, I have definitely less than a 2% chance of dying, probably significantly less. But the scary thing is that it seems like about 20% of people who get it require hospitalization and fairly intense ICU care. So think like breathing support and being put on ventilators. There's not many ventilators across the US, it turns out. So it seems like getting sick early might actually increase your chances of survival a lot.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I'm learning from this is just how absolutely insane exponential growth is. The growth charts for this have clearly exhibited that. And this is, weirdly enough, exponential growth of the diagnosed cases. I suspect there's this secret curve of undiagnosed cases that could be substantially larger. And the thing with exponential growth is that it happens so fast. Again, like within the last week, we went from nothing in the US at all to our first case in Washington, to the first death in Washington, to a statewide state of emergency, into, you know, my employer went to, we are concerned about this, no travel, and then work from home as normal. If you currently work from home one day a week, you know, that's fine. Into, we welcome all employees to work from home. Into, we recommend and encourage everybody to work from home. This is literally in the last week, and we've already seen upwards of 10 to 20 deaths in the state alone.
The exponential function is just so counterintuitive to people. I've been following this for a few months, and I know the trajectory that it's taken in different places. Logically, I understand that what we're seeing in Washington is going to result in 100x case growth really, really quickly. But there's a big part of me that's saying, well, there's only like, what, 50 to 100 infected people right now. It's fine. I should go grab a drink with my BFF. I shouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, it's tough. The stats in terms of death rate seem to be that if you're under 40, the death rate is quite low in the 0.2% in terms of what's called the case fatality rate of the people who get infected, what percent die. And then as you get into the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it jumps from 1.3% in the 50s all the way to 14.8% for the people in their 80s, which is a scarily high number. So I would encourage, you know, call up your parents, try to encourage them to wash their hands a lot and take precautions and be prepared.
Yeah, right now, Seattle is recommending that if you're over 60, you should just stay home.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's not that hard to stay home. You can stock up on a bunch of food and water and just hunker down if your job allows you to do that.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I have friends in Minnesota where I grew up. Some of them are like, oh, it's in Seattle. Sucks for you guys. We're not worried. And I'm like, well,
just wait 2 weeks.
Yeah. It probably already is in Minnesota, first off, and you're going to find out about it.
Yeah.
And then within a week, your state is going to also be in a state of emergency, encouraging everybody to work from home. If you're in one of these states that are countries that hasn't really had an outbreak or concern yet, I would take the time to just kind of prepare a little bit. The worst case scenario is that you, what, look slightly crazy. I asked my boss on Saturday, like, hey, is it okay if I work from home for the next week? Thinking like, well, the worst case scenario is I look like I wanted to work from home. 4 days later, the whole company is on the same page as me.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't jump to working from home just yet if you're in Wisconsin, but a good thing to do right now is to just buy some of the things that we already know get sold out really quickly once you see a few cases. So in Washington, there's no hand sanitizer anywhere. Every store is sold out. Also in California and Washington, toilet paper, weirdly, is something that people are panic buying, so lots of photos of empty shelves at the Costcos of the world. No toilet paper to be found. I wouldn't personally worry too much about toilet paper because you can substitute that for napkins or whatever. Hand sanitizer is a good one to have. Any sort of bleach-based cleaning products are nice to have. Masks, if you can find them, are probably good, but those are probably sold out even outside of Washington and California at this point.
Yeah, the high-level guidance, I would say, is just try to reach a state of just general preparedness, not just for coronavirus, but, you know, it's good to have supplies on hand in case there's like an earthquake or a tornado or any sort of other natural disaster. General recommendation for that is give or take about 2 weeks of food, water, medicine. I go backpacking this summer, so I just have a bunch of backpacking meals on standby, but you can also just pick up, you know, a pound of rice and like a few cans of beans will go a long way towards having absolutely nothing.
Yeah, you know, I've been hearing, be prepared for a few weeks of power outages. Or no food supply for a long time. And, you know, it sort of was in the back of my mind, but I'd never really done anything about it. And just a month or two ago, I started getting some supplies together in the wake of this coronavirus thing. And I bought some food, I bought some water, I bought some medicine. I have a little first aid kit sitting in my closet. One thing that I noticed is that the second that I had those things, I just felt a lot better about everything. This level of anxiety that I didn't even realize existed was just gone because now no matter what happens, I'm fine for like a month.
Yeah, yeah. The news these days is just always so alarmist that reacting to news stories always feels like, you know, a little crazy. Oh, wow, the stock market dropped by whatever. I should go live in some other country or, you know, do something crazy. Okay, but this actually seems to be the real deal in terms of wanting to be prepared and react to the news. I don't want to say overreact. I don't think anybody should be panicking, but I think we should be kind of patiently trying to understand what's happening and take small steps to help mitigate what may come.
As far as ways to get prepared, I think the biggest thing is food. One thing that's very likely to happen is you're likely to be asked to stay home for a certain period of time, right? Well before we're in any sort of crisis mode, both companies and cities and counties might be enacting some form of quarantine procedures. So food, absolutely crucial. It means you could just hunker down and not worry about leaving your house for a while. But for me, when I went to go stock up on food at the grocery store, I was a little bit overwhelmed, right? There are so many options and the foods that I normally eat weren't available. So just off the top of my head, a couple of things you can buy that are fairly inexpensive and store forever. Rice, just 10-pound, 25-pound bags of rice. If you have like 30 pounds of rice, you're set for a pretty long time. That covers kind of the carb category. You can get a little adventurous and stock up on some pasta as well. Pasta takes up more space, but if you get the more dense pasta, then you can get a bunch of pasta as well. And then your body also needs fats. It could be something as simple as just picking up a large bottle of olive oil or vegetable oil. Butter, you can get some bricks of butter and freeze them. It'll last forever in your freezer. And then obviously you don't want to live on rice and oil alone. So any sort of canned veggies that you like. I like corn a lot, so I have a ton of canned corn. Maybe a little bit of protein. So think chickpeas, canned tuna, corned beef.
Yeah, I think beans are a good recommendation. Personally, I'm not much of a chef. Some context here is that one quite reasonable situation is that if you in fact get sick yourself, please stay healthy, is that you want to self-quarantine for about 14 days. And so really, what would it take to be, if you are sick, as comfortable as possible for those 14 days? For me, like reaching to my frozen olive oil and rice, I don't know, I just want to make a frozen pizza or like microwave a burrito or, you know, things like that.
That's fair.
The nice thing is that this all blows over, you know, what's the worst case scenario is I have some frozen pizzas on hand. I eat those normally anyway.
Yeah, in that vein, ramen, some canned chicken noodle soup, super easy. It takes like 3 minutes to heat it up in the microwave.
Yeah, canned soups are a great recommendation. And if you overbuy, you can donate to a food shelf next holiday season or soon.
Or just pig out when you're feeling lazy one night.
Also, I guess I would recommend getting medicine on hand for if you were sick for a couple of weeks and had a cough. So I bought like a pack of DayQuil and NyQuil. I'm not sponsored by them by any means. They're just a name brand here in the States.
Yeah, whatever your favorite painkiller is, Think Advil, Tylenol, some sort of sleeping medicine.
Two things that I've heard that are really good for this disease in particular is a thermometer and a pulse oximeter. And so when I say thermometer, I mean like a digital thermometer that you stick under your tongue. These two things help monitor for two things. One is if you have a fever, which is one of the most common symptoms. And two, the pulse oximeter measures the oxygen level in your blood. This disease typically attacks the respiratory system. One thing that can make it quite dangerous is if you develop pneumonia, which is actually a pretty common symptom, even in the mild cases is the crazy thing. Pulse oximeter will help tell you if you're reaching the more like kind of dangerous levels of oxygen where you should be consulting emergency medical assistance.
Yeah, and pulse oximeter sounds really fancy or heavy-handed. I'd never heard of a pulse oximeter before this coronavirus stuff started happening. But no, it's a tiny, tiny little gadget. It's like yay big. You can order it on Amazon for $15 and it'll be shipped via next day delivery.
And by yay big, Maria means about 2 inches by 1 inch by 1 inch.
Oh, right. No video.
It basically sits on your finger and I guess it can read the pulse going through your finger.
I just got mine in the mail. I haven't opened it yet, but I'm keen to play with it.
Yeah. If you ever want to know your resting heart rate, for example, this is one of the most accurate ways to do it.
The thing I like about the idea of having one is, let's say you do get sick. There's like a 90% chance that it's the flu or something fairly benign. If it is just the flu, going to the hospital is a terrible idea because you're very, very likely to get infected at a hospital during an outbreak. So I would personally just want to know whether I'm at that threshold of having to go to the hospital yet. Like when you're sick, you always feel like you're dying, right? I just want to make sure that I'm actually dying before I call 911.
Yeah. And I know Washington State has set up a medical hotline for coronavirus-related concerns, and I don't think it'll take long before we have those sorts of hotlines set up across every state and every country, if they aren't already. The two biggest recommendations so far in terms of hygiene, one is a real one, and it's wash your hands. So personally, I have this new policy. Whenever I get home, I wash my hands. Soap and water, 20 seconds. Likewise, if I go and I walk somewhere, you know, visiting a friend, when I get there, I will just wash my hands as a courtesy. I don't think I'm likely to get it from going from my apartment into my car, but I do pass through an elevator on the way. I would recommend sanitizer, but of course, you can't really buy sanitizer right now.
You can make hand sanitizer really easily, though. Basically, if you get some rubbing alcohol, they sell rubbing alcohol everywhere. It's not sold out. And some aloe vera gel, and you just mix them together. Google the right proportions, because it's kind of important not to fuck up the proportion. But yeah, lots of hand sanitizer.
One thing you cannot do is use Tito's vodka to make hand sanitizer, because it's only 40% alcohol. And if it sounds like I'm just making this up...
Damon tried.
There's a big news story about people asking if they could, and Tito's putting out notices saying, like, please, we would love it if you enjoy our vodka, but don't use it to make hand sanitizer.
Yeah, it has to be at least 70% alcohol. That's the cutoff.
Yeah. Read an article about how to do this. Don't take our word for it. And then there's kind of a meme recommendation. And I say meme because it's impossible, and that's don't touch your face. So there's like videos of coronavirus experts saying, don't touch your face. And then it shows the person licking their tongue. And you're like, It's actually just really hard. But if you have the self-discipline to not touch your face, by all means, I wish you the best.
Yeah, the big one for me is I can't really avoid touching my face, but I try to be more mindful of the surfaces I touch and try to evaluate them as far as how many people are likely to have touched it recently. So the lobby button on my elevator, I'm just freaked out about. Everyone presses that. And door handles, especially in high traffic areas, are pretty scary. So you do have to press the elevator button. But when I do, I'll either use my elbow, because you can't touch your elbow to your face. Right? Or I'll use my hands, but then I do use hand sanitizer immediately after.
Yeah, there's also a recommendation to basically just not really shake hands with people. I think in France they were asked to stop kissing on the cheek. So apparently you can either do like a toe tap is what got popularized in Wuhan, China, or you can do like an elbow, kind of elbow five or something. The other big recommendation is what's called social distancing, which is not just life in your 30s, but means something more specific.
I don't know what it means.
Yeah, so social distancing is saying, like, well, the most obvious one is schools and work. Can you avoid going into work? A lot of jobs, you can work from home. A lot of jobs, you can't. For the jobs that can, not going into work is maybe a good recommendation. At this point, in Washington State, at least, it's, like, highly encouraged for every job where it's possible. Schools are potentially getting closed. We'll see how that goes. That's kind of on a school-by-school basis. But then otherwise, for example, do I really want to go to the bars right now? I don't know. Emerald City Comic Con got canceled. Magic Fest Touring got canceled. I think you'll see more and more of these types of events getting canceled. Some countries have ruled out gatherings of more than, I think, 5,000 people. Generally speaking, things that you're with a lot of other people in relatively close contact. One highly pertinent question, for example, is should you go to that Magic tournament this weekend?
No, you shouldn't. Do not go.
Yeah, I struggle with this. There's a Canlander 1K coming up that I love that format. But here's the thing is that you're playing this match of Magic and you're about, 3 feet from somebody head to head, face to face. And if that person's sick, you're with them for an hour, and maybe you can avoid them sneezing on you and maybe you can wash your hands after the match. But like at that level of proximity, it just seems like the risk isn't worth it.
Yeah, there's just so many people and they're all touching everything. I wouldn't want to be there. Yeah, one thing that was hard for me is the guidance of not shaking hands. I just started a new job and I swear everyone wanted to shake my hands. I didn't want to awkwardly refuse. So what I started doing is the second someone would come up to me, I would preemptively just enthusiastically wave in their general direction. And people are really good about following suit. They're like, hi, and you wave, they'll just wave back. So it's a very non-awkward way to avoid the handshake.
Yeah. The good news for us is that Magic is a game that is excellent for being played online. And so if you have a lot of hobbies that are kind of less social in nature, like reading or writing or anything on the internet or on your computer, playing an instrument, talking to friends that live out of state, this is a great time to kind of catch up on all those things. This seems like overly precautious. Here's the thing is that exponential growth, you'll find out within a week or not if this seems under precautious or kind of correctly precautious or overly precautious, you could just drop it.
I think for those people who do feel like maybe it's a little overly cautious to avoid all people entirely, I would say one good strategy is to just pick one small group of people to hang out with. Like if you're playing Magic, play Magic with the same buddies consistently and have it be a small circle.
Yeah. And in particular, make sure they all wash their hands when they get there. And this is where getting more into the fourth part of this episode, the speculative part. So suppose that the U.S. doesn't want to do full quarantine like China. That makes sense. It seems like it'd be very difficult. This kind of social distancing taken to the extreme is kind of like a voluntary social reaction of quarantine, where I'm not going to take it to the extreme. I'm not going to leave my apartment. That seems, I would go crazy. But I'm going to do things that I think are relatively low risk. I'm going to go play board games or Magic with a small group of friends. I'm going to try to make sure that we're all at least relatively cognizant of what's going on. I'm going to monitor my temperature every morning just to get a baseline and have, detect a fever early. These things all seem, pretty reasonable, honestly, and painless for the most part. I'm going to probably cook more, eat out less. That actually is slightly painful. I'm not a good cook, and I'm also very lazy. But actually, it's ultimately, I think, both cheaper and healthier.
Yeah, a lot of these things are good habits. I mean, cooking at home and sanitizing your hands before eating. Those are maybe things that people haven't been doing too much in the U.S. lately. They're good habits to get back into.
Yeah. And there's the trickier cases, going to the gym. If you just sit at home the whole time, you're going to go a little crazy.
Dude, I don't know. I would get a few free weights and just have them at home. The gym seems like the sketchiest area because everyone is sweating all over the gym equipment.
Yeah. The nice thing is when I'm at the gym, I typically, I think, just naturally don't touch my face because my hands just get a little bit, sweaty or gross or whatever. And gyms are usually equipped with a bunch of wipes to help to wipe down the equipment. And you're in and out within an hour.
I think I'm just looking for an excuse not to go to the gym, honestly.
That's fair. A yoga mat will go a long way. If you haven't picked up yoga, you can find lots of videos for it online. It doesn't take up a whole lot of space and is a very good form of activity, especially if you're kind of sitting down all day. Personally, I like to go on walks, and I feel like as long as I'm walking not in a super crowded area, it seems like the risk is pretty low.
Would you say the risk to the general public is low? That's what all the health experts have been saying. Every time you watch any sort of World Health Organization press conference, everyone repeats the same sentence over and over and over again. The risk to the general public is low. And the other day, actually, I freaked out because I was watching a press conference held by folks in King County. And this woman goes up to the podium and she says, the risk to the general public is increasing. And I just go, oh my God, we're fucked.
Increasing from low to still low, but slightly more.
Do you want to talk a little bit about working from home?
Oh, just general work from home guidance?
Yeah, general guidance and the fact that it's happening and is likely going to happen to a lot of people and kind of how it's the world's biggest work from home experiment.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to kind of close this out with a discussion of work from home for those of us who have jobs that have this option available to us. It sounds very simple, right? Work from home. What could be easier? Your job. At home,
And it sounds kind of fun, right? Just hang out in your PJs, don't have to go to any meetings.
Yeah. But for example, I learned in my first years at grad school that I actually just didn't do anything. I like worked from home and I just read it to a different website, to like a video game, to whatever. Got no work done. And I guess I kind of personally managed to procrastinate my way all the way through procrastination, if that makes sense. And then years 3 through 5, I started working much more effectively. And so the way I learned to work from home, I think I would not recommend unless you're willing to just, you know, have 2 years of your life just pass you by.
Yeah, I've run remote teams in the past. What I found is that oftentimes it just feels like a fundamentally lonely experience. You get over the excitement of being at home and being able to watch Netflix every now and then, and realize that humans are just very social creatures, and not being around anyone for an extended period of time, you start to go a little crazy.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to reach out to your friends. I'm sure all my coworkers who are working from home also are going to be going a little bit crazy in the coming weeks.
At my workplace, we were just asked to work from home a couple days ago as well. One thing that we're trying to do is just whenever we have meetings, turn on our webcams and do the meetings, not over voice, but over voice plus video. And that actually helps a lot. It feels a lot more engaging.
Yeah. For example, having a good headset, I found, makes an enormous difference. Like, I used to use the little kind of earbuds that are like in your ear. And after like an hour of being on a phone call or whatever, my ears would hurt. Those were, you know, $15. The microphone is in them kind of sucked. And the headset I actually am using to record this very podcast cost me, I think, $90 on Amazon. This is like a gaming headset. And the call quality from the microphone and the comfort of the speakers is just way better than kind of cheaper options. So this is like something that might be worth investing in now.
I might have to do that. I mostly use my Apple AirPods.
Yeah. There's a ton of good articles about working from home from seasoned veterans. If you are in this situation, I think it's worth reading one of those for yourself. One of the general recommendations they have is, okay, so working from home means that work and home are like the same thing, right? Well, that's not very healthy. You want to kind of set boundaries between the two. And that'd be as simple as you wake up, you're wearing pajamas. Don't wear your pajamas when you're working. Change out of your pajamas and then kind of commence your workday. And like, of course, there are distractions or whatever, but then set a clear kind of end of workday. At 6 o'clock, I'm going to stop working. Because it can be pretty easy, I found, to just get into it and then just keep working. And then at some point, your life starts to get a little bit weird feeling if you don't set these boundaries.
Yeah, it's nice to carve out a dedicated space too. I have a little corner where if I am there with my laptop, then it's all work mode.
Yeah, I integrated my workspace into my personal space just because that's where my monitors and desk are. But if you have the ability to have like a separate office, then so much the better. Yeah, like if you think you might be working from home due to coronavirus, I would recommend testing out your setup as soon as possible. I would actually recommend testing out almost every axis of this. Like if you haven't cooked in a while, grab some food and cook a meal. You know, I found I was like, oh, wow, I'm missing butter. Like, what?
You didn't have butter? Oh my god.
Yeah, I had like olive oil, I had like salt and stuff, but I didn't have butter.
Yeah, that's an important one.
Yeah, and I realized I like didn't have, you know how like there's measuring cups for liquids and measuring cups for solids? I only had one of those.
That's fancy. I don't know. I don't have a liquid one.
Aren't they different measurements though, by volume?
Tell me the difference between a liquid measuring cup and a non-liquid measuring cup.
Interesting. Maybe I'm the one in the wrong on this.
I know liquids do weird things with their surface area on top of the measuring cup. So if you're trying to be super precise, it's a little tricky, but that's only going to apply if you're baking or doing something incredibly technical. You can just eyeball it.
So the good news is that a cup is a cup.
Shocking.
Dry or liquid, I was wrong. They are the same. But I guess a liquid measuring cup is better for if you're pouring in a liquid. You don't want to pour to the very brim. You want to pour to the measuring line. Whereas a solid measuring cup is meant to be leveled off so it's even on top. And so the measuring line is the exact top of the rim.
I think you might be okay if you just have one cup.
Okay.
You might survive.
Sure. This is certainly an interesting opportunity to learn about various, probably pretty useful life skills, like what is a liquid cup versus a solid cup. Yeah, so that's all we have. There's obviously plenty more reading material on coronavirus, and if you're interested, I recommend follow the relevant subreddits. The New York Times has a pretty good newsletter you can subscribe to. Every day they have coronavirus updates. Maybe follow your local health department on Twitter. I normally do not do that. I don't follow anything grown-up on Twitter. I just follow, you know, magic and sports and stuff. But now I have a couple kind of grown-up Twitter feeds I follow, like
nice.
The King County Department of Health. In the meantime, I hope everybody stay safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, and hopefully we all get through this together.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for being with us, Maria.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
That'll do it for this special edition of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. You can find links to the resources mentioned by Damon and Maria in the episode description of your podcast player, as well as on our Twitter feed at FaithlessMTG and our website, faithlessbrewing.podbean.com. We will return later this week with our regularly scheduled Magic the Gathering content. In the meantime, thank you for listening, stay safe, and please do what you can to help your communities stay informed.